This is Mike Tatarski, host of the Vietnam Weekly podcast, coming to you from Hanoi, actually, with a special edition of the podcast. This came about at the last minute. I'd already planned to come up here just for a normal trip, and then obviously Typhoon Yagi hit, and happened to be able to do a little bit of reporting on it, and also had the opportunity to visit the offices of Blue Dragon Children's Foundation, which I've shared the link to their emergency appeal for relief aid in the newsletter. And also Michael Posofsky, their co-CEO, has been a podcast guest before, so listeners will be familiar with Blue Dragon. But I visited their office and sat down with Sky McConaughey, the other CEO of Blue Dragon, who took some time out of her incredibly busy week coordinating her team to help the community here in Hanoi impacted by the storm, and getting out into the field herself. So we chatted for a little bit about, you know, what they've seen, how they've responded to the storm, what the needs are here, both here in Hanoi, where communities along the river, many of whom are migrant workers or people without kind of registered housing, how they're handling the river flooding from earlier this week. And then, of course, the incredibly serious situation in the mountains, which I've written about in the newsletter, and I'm sure you've seen some of the heartbreaking images up there. As I'm recording this, the death toll from the storm overall is at 262, with over 80 people still missing. Again, these numbers could continue to go up, so support will be needed in the long term as well, which is something Sky and I talked about. So Sky's three-year-old daughter was with us in the recording studio, so you'll hear some background noise from her, and as well as Peppa Pig, which she was watching. And this was recorded on my phone, so the audio is not quite as strong as it normally is, but I'm glad this opportunity presented itself. I mean, of course, it's tragic that it was in these circumstances, but I really found what Sky had said interesting, and I hope it gives people elsewhere a sense of how things are here a week, actually, since Yagi made landfall. So let's get to my conversation with Sky. Sky, great to be here with you at the Blue Dragon office in Hanoi.
Oh, thanks for making your way up here, Mike, in these circumstances.
Yeah, I'm glad this worked out. I mean, it's been easy for me. I have nothing to complain about. But of course, it's been an extremely busy week for you and your team here. Do you want to kind of just tell listeners what it's been like?
Yeah, sure. So I guess we've been working around the clock since Friday, when Cyclone Yagi was preparing to cross Vietnam's into Vietnam.
Mommy.
And so, oh, and my daughter's also here, hence the small sounds in the background. And so since then, we've, you know, we're helping families that we work with who live in very vulnerable areas to get to safety. And then I guess the biggest hit came post typhoon, with all of the flooding that started on Tuesday, particularly for communities that were in areas near the Red River.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw those water levels rise really quickly, and the government warnings just go from 1 to 2
yeah.
To 3. So that was quite a hectic time. There were still many people who needed to be relocated, many people who weren't ready to leave their homes yet, because, or their animals, you know, that's all that they have. Mm-hmm. So we work with people who are really already very, very disadvantaged and living in poverty. So, and struggling with many things in life, like legal paperwork, keeping their kids in school, having a safe and secure home. So they were hugely, hugely impacted, and really wanted to, preserve everything that they had, which obviously they have now lost everything.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the river, like, I mean, how much, I know that, like you said, the government was putting out warnings about the alerts, but if you're living in, you know, just for, maybe you could describe a little bit, but these communities down along the river, so we're outside the dike in Hanoi, just for reference, you know, are they getting, like, text messages that the waters are rising, or what kind of communication would they have?
There's all kinds of modes of communication here. It's actually really well coordinated. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of information on social media. There's the official government notices that come out to each of the districts, and then those authorities will make sure that those messages are getting out to people. So that's the beauty of Vietnam, all of the different groups and how well coordinated it is. And especially in crises, we see that, you know, clearly see that coordination happen, particularly in neighborhoods, communities, and even in the communities up north. The communication is really good. In remote areas up north, though, you know, they rely on phones in crises because everyone lives so far away, so that's a challenge. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about the mountains in a minute, where the situation is much worse. But here in Hanoi, I mean, what are these impacted communities? What are kind of the most immediate needs now?
So as of yesterday, the waters have gone down. Electricity is still cut in some areas, and people who are living like really close to the riverbanks are still still haven't been able to return to where they've been living. So for now, it's big cleanup. Many of them don't want to go back to where they were. You know, like there's a psychological and emotional period where people need to kind of process all that's lost. They need to feel safe before they can even get their head around how they rebuild or how they clean up. So for now, we're still providing a lot of fresh meals to families because they don't have electricity on or gas to cook, but as well as fresh produce. But the picture that we're looking at now is like how to clean up, focusing on people's health, their physical health, their mental health, and then like working through, okay, what is the short-term accommodation plan? Some people will need rooms rented for them long-term while they work out, you know, what's next. Do they rebuild? Do they relocate? What's the situation? Many of those families also come from the countryside, where in provinces that have been affected. So for now, they're now returning to try and see what has happened back there to their families. But the long-term is really rebuilding those livelihoods. Many people have lost their animals. That was their source of income, or other equipment or things for their livelihoods. So livelihoods, rebuilding houses and continuing that emergency support as people transition through this period back to the rebuild.
Okay. And in terms of preparation, I mean, obviously we knew the storm was coming for a week or so, I suppose. Although I think the river flooding may have caught people a little bit by surprise, but how did the families, the children, or teens you're working with, how did you kind of prepare before the storm's arrival?
Yeah, so we have our own like communication, and so we our social workers worked with our young people about that, either on social media groups or face to face. We had social workers going out and visiting families and talking to them to help them understand what was happening. But I think like there's two parts to that. Like no one expected the winds of Yagi to hit Hanoi at the velocity that they did, and then followed by the rain. So there was preparation that we could do, really helping families to understand what it meant, but we didn't fully know what it meant. And that was done together with authorities and their communication out to communities. But, you know, sometimes that can be missed. So we really like make sure that we're talking face to face with families, working with them on a plan A, a plan B, what that means, and staying in communication with them. Okay. Yeah. But the river, to the levels that it came, you know, that hasn't happened for many, many decades. So it really took everyone by surprise.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And then kind of logistically, you know, what kind of supplies are you distributing and how are you getting them out to people?
Yep. So we have lots of donations coming in, financial and in-kind donations. So I guess over the week we've been supporting with essential food packages, rice, noodles, eggs, you know, fruit, easy to eat things, fresh meals, torches, batteries, fresh drinking water, small medical supplies, things that people need just to get through this period. So, and how have we been delivering those? Well, you didn't see them this morning, but yesterday there was a lot of those big plastic pants with boots attached to them for pig farming, all hanging out the front of our building. So our team actually would take supplies from our center here and drive them out to the areas and then go into those areas, walking through the water on boats or different forms of water transport, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, you know, the boats that would be available at each point to deliver those supplies.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess we can move upstream to, you know, the mountainous region where it's, you know, Hanoi is still a little bit of a mess, but in the mountains it's quite, I mean, genuinely tragic. A lot of the communities have kind of been wiped out, a couple of villages in particular. So I've seen a lot about Lao Cai and Cao Bang, which were very hard hit. But I know you guys have particular projects in Haziang and Dianbian, which I haven't seen much about, but is they border those other first two provinces I mentioned. So what's the situation there?
Yeah, well, I guess just firstly, before I go to Haziang and Dianbian, I just want to say, like, just, you know, share my deepest grief and condolences for those communities in Lao Cai and Cao Bang, for all that they've lost, for those families, for those children, for the authorities, you know, what they're grappling with, the aftermath, and, you know, all support that they can get. Let's send it.
Yeah.
For Harzang and DMBN, because they're such remote communities, in that initial, you know, when the waters were rising across the country, you know, the earth is so saturated. Mm. There was still a lot of rain falling in China. China had to release water from dams,
yeah.
You know, because if they break, then that's right. Even more catastrophic. So there's just so much water around. So we had to wait until things cleared up a bit before we and the authorities could get to families and see what was going on. And so what we've been hearing from families that we're helping who lost their houses in landslides but fortunately were able to keep their lives is that during that time, you know, electricity was cut. They, you know, obviously their phones ran out of battery.
Yeah.
And they were just in the dark kind of surviving in between, you know, what was happening and salvaging what they could and waiting for help to come.
Mm.
So that help is coming now. So we work in partnership with our government partners up there. They're doing an incredible emergency response and also preparing for that long haul, because what they're seeing is so many houses affected by landslides. One house of a family, miraculously, the landslide just stopped as it was pushing through its back wall. So there's a photo of it like pushing through a cement wall, which is just, you know, you've really got to count your lucky stars.
Yeah.
But being able to get to people and know the full extent of the issues up there is going to take some time, but they're on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anyone listening has traveled up in those regions, it's breathtakingly gorgeous, but I guess even in the best of times can be kind of a difficult place to live. And just a sense of the remoteness, I mean, there was kind of this remarkable story, a positive story, but where the officials had listed this entire village as missing and then just found them. They had, like, escaped or fled from landslide risk themselves and were kind of just like living on a mountain, and then they just not kind of stumbled upon them, no cell phone service, were like, oh, okay, they're all alive, fantastic. But so obviously I guess some people have to take it into their own hands as well.
Yeah,
give them the remoteness.
Yeah, and the incredible resilience, I mean, the incredible resilience of Vietnamese people anyhow, but when you live remotely, you know, people are normally on their own anyhow. They live sustainably. They're used to dealing with difficulty.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, yeah, but we're seeing great coordination up in the north. But I think the extent, and this isn't just for the provinces that we're working in, but the extent of the impact will continue to be revealed in coming weeks as, you know, people are able to get out and reach people.
And then in terms of, so we talked about, you know, immediate needs here in Hanoi, where, you know, if your house floods, obviously that's terrible, but at least you still have a house afterwards. But if a landslide has wiped out a village, I mean, it's just gone. So kind of how do you respond to it? Like, where do the people go? What do they need?
Yeah, well, I guess as an NGO, an international NGO working here in Vietnam, we're licensed to operate in certain areas. And so we are in Hanoi and Harzang and Dien Bien. So we have a whole team there. We have very strong partnerships. So for us, we're focusing on where we can make the greatest impact. And they're the areas that we're focusing on. That is not at all to say that there are other areas that need support and focus from Vietnam and the world to help with.
Right.
But yeah, so that's for now, that's where we're focusing our efforts on, where we can make the most impact. If there's a call out, or depending on what happens in the coming week, as waters reside and what support is requested, then we can consider about that.
Okay. And so how do you get supplies? I mean, you have teams in those two provinces, but obviously a lot of, I mean, national highways, for example, have been blocked by landslides. So how does that work?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, in all of our work, and especially in a disaster, we always try to buy locally because the economy in those areas have been hit hugely. And we, you know, that's where we want to be helping the economy to recover as well. So as much as possible, we try to buy locally because, and the fact that you just mentioned, you know, the challenge of getting to and from with road blockages or even just remoteness, you know, like our teams have got to climb up mountains or to get to people. So local is always best. Yesterday we discussed about getting we discussed about getting hand water filters as a temporary solution. Sorry. Hand water filters. We can't get them locally up there, so we're looking for suppliers to help with that and send them up to make sure that people have clean drinking water. There you go, sweetheart. So, yeah, so there's some things that I think that will come up where we need to source suppliers outside of that local area, but it, with the priority of people's health. So, and thinking about short-term and long-term. So right now they need clean drinking water, but long-term, you know, do we rebuild a water filtration system in that village? Right. So we're always thinking about, like, the short-term, immediate emergency response, keep people safe, healthy, and then always thinking that forward planning of what is the rebuild going to be, what are the key things that those communities and families are going to need. Yeah
And you mentioned the long term which we were talking about a little bit before we started recording. I mean, I know, so I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I grew up in New Orleans in the States, so I kind of experienced Katrina and other storms, and you know, they're traumatic to say the least, and there is long term, you know, mental health needs and things like that, which I know is still a newer concept here, at risk of generalizing. And you mentioned the resilience, which is amazing. You know, there's people outside the office right now cleaning up. But again, people, it's just traumatic experience. What are some of the needs long term?
Well, long term, people need houses. They need a safe and secure place to live. What people have now, or where they're living now, is all they have. So if they don't have a safe and secure home, it's very, very hard to overcome any, you know, psychological or economical, or, you know, all of that that's being taken from them. So that is like a key focus. First, we need to ensure they have somewhere safe to stay, but also then the long term, not just emergency, like, this is someone's whole life. It's like generations of their family in this place, and generations for their future. So that's hugely important to have that safe home. So a lot of rebuilding, renovating, or you know, relocating in worst case scenario, and then earning an income. It's the priority, because if they can earn, there's purpose. If they have a home, they're safe. And also, you know, a lot of very touching news that's coming out of the provinces where we work in the north is that, you know, even with houses wiped out, some people are saying, we just want you to help us to get our child to school so that they can stay in school and keep learning, because, you know, like, it's the whole ecosystem for that family.
Sure. And kind of building on that, I mean, I know, so we're talking about immediate disaster relief, but of course, one of Blue Dragon's core missions, I guess, is dealing with human trafficking, which, you know, listeners will know, your colleague Michael has been on the podcast before. Maybe it's kind of too early to be thinking about this, but what impact could this have on, you know, one of the drivers of human trafficking is poverty, issue, you know, lack of education. So what kind of impact might that have on some of those issues?
Yeah, look, I mean, once the water recedes and people kind of have some form of stability, so many people have lost everything. We know that that's a driving factor. Post-COVID, we saw that. We saw a huge increase of vulnerability and a broader target group of people being targeted by human trafficking. That's what human traffickers do, is they target vulnerability. We are going to see, we expect to see that vulnerability increase. More people are going to be wanting to take the opportunity to try and help their family overcome this. And a lot of that requires money. So we're expecting an increase, but I kind of, you know, when will that happen? I'm not sure, because of the shock and grief and loss, like, yeah, but we're very, very aware of that. So we really want to make sure that people can rebuild their livelihoods ASAP.
Okay.
And they don't have to take the risk of migrating for work.
Right. Okay. And then, you know, a lot of people want to help right now, which obviously a lot of people have helped already.
Yes.
But I know from personal experience, you know, after storms in the States, attention fades quickly.
Yep.
I mean, I've noticed even down in Ho Chi Minh City, you know, within a day or two of the storm, people were like, oh, it's fine up there, right? It's like, well, not really. But so what, like, you know, how can people, what would you tell people who maybe want to, you know, continue helping long, or provide some form of long-term support, or just, you know, to keep some focus on this?
Yeah, so I guess absolutely keep supporting. The best thing you can do is actually donate money to organizations and agencies, government and non-government, who are doing that long-term rebuild recovery. So where they have a long-term commitment to those provinces, because then they can work in partnership with government agencies to keep feeding in aid and support for that. Yeah, I know it's hard because there's so much happening in the world, and we're going to keep getting mega storms. But if you can donate and give, it will make a huge difference. And for that long-term recovery.
Okay. And I guess I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I mean, is there anything particularly noteworthy that you maybe saw when you were out doing, response work this week? I don't know, anything.
Yeah.
heartwarming maybe, or otherwise.
Yeah, well, it's definitely been a mix of both. Sure. I think, amongst the chaos of floodwaters rising, I just saw the community coming together. There were cars pulled up all along the dike, getting boats out of the back of their car, personal, flotation devices. And it was just one after another. If you look down the alleys of people helping to bring, elderly out, mums out, children out, and then the next morning, I saw the boat still coming in after the darkness had passed, and all the strong men were coming out. So I just had that sense they were sending the most vulnerable out first and the strongest staying behind to take care of things until they could get out. I was out in the community yesterday helping to clean up a couple of houses, and we helped... There you go, sweetheart. Sorry.
It's okay.
We helped a grandma. She's 75, living in a tiny shack. Just such a staunch, resilient woman. My goodness. She'd been up since 6 a.m. Her whole house was underwater. Her shack, I wouldn't call it a house. She'd been up since 6 a.m. just pushing everything out. There was, shrapnel everywhere around the house, and everything she just had to throw out. And she was so calm and joyful when we showed up. She's like, oh gosh, you guys got here early. she gave us instructions, and she was just leading the cleanup, and she just didn't stop. And it was just such a privilege and so humbling to be with her. Just so few belongings, but she's like, yep, chuck them out, everything that had been destroyed by the floodwaters. Her big smile at the end of it with her underneath her conical hat. And her weathered hands, just really moving. And people are so grateful for the support that they're receiving. Really, really grateful. And that was just so wonderful to see. Everyone's joining hands. So I think,
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, certainly we already mentioned the resilience here. And I think, during COVID, for example, you had a prime example of the sense of community here and people helping each other. So not surprising, I suppose, that's happening after Yagi as well. A long road to recovery, unfortunately, for many areas. We didn't even...
disaster.
We didn't even talk about the coast. I know you guys don't really operate there, but a lot of wind damage in places like Katba. Halong and those sorts of things. But yeah, lots of resilience, lots of recovery efforts underway.
Yeah.
So Sky, thanks so much for taking some time.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for coming and seeing us. We appreciate it
Of course. Thank you. And a couple cameos from Peppa Pig.
Courtesy of my daughter.
I've shared the emergency appeal link a couple times. I'll include that in the show notes for this. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your very busy week to tell listeners how things are going.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mike.
That's it for this special episode of the Vietnam Weekly Podcast. I'll be back in your feeds on Monday with a regular scheduled show. So thank you for listening, and see you soon.